Well, good morning. It is a pleasure to be here. I would like to thank the organizers. The topic of my talk is coupled, or the title is coupled electron hole errors in the quantum Hall effect regime. But what I would like to discuss specifically is mutual Coulomb drag between two layers, one of electrons and one of holes, and I'm going to describe it in a second. Measurements were done mostly by Yuval Yaish, who is sitting somewhere here, and by Oleg Pous, two graduate students of mine at Technion. It was also done in collaboration with Paul Solomon from IBM. You know, when you go to a conference, it is always like going to some fancy restaurant. You're being served with all those fancy dishes and so on and so forth, but nobody ever takes you to the kitchen. So, being known for my impoliteness, I'm going to start the tour in the kitchen. All right? And the reason I'm going to do that is because drag measurements in the quantum Hall effect regime are extremely tricky business. And what I'd like to show is what could be source of all kind of artifacts. So one should really be extremely careful in those measurements, like Tom was saying yesterday. Anyway, I'll try to convince you that the food I'm going to serve is not poisonous, and then I'll go on. All right, so how do we create two parallel electron hole layers which are closely spaced? It is a structure that we developed a few years ago with Paul Solomon. It's a gallium arsenide structure. You start with the N plus gallium arsenide substrate, on top of which you grow something like 2,000 or 3,000 of intrinsic gallium arsenide layer, and then a thin Alges barrier with very high aluminum concentration, so that it is it has very high resistance, so small tunneling probability. Then an intrinsic layer of gallium arsenide, N gallium arsenide, and a top layer of N plus gallium arsenide, which serves as a contact. Now, electrons will be induced here on top of the barrier, and holes will be induced, as I'm going to show in a second, at the bottom of the barrier. We etch the top layer everywhere except for the contact region and deposit a metal gate on top. So we end up with basically four layers. This is the top gate, an electron layer, hole layer, and a substrate, and these two gates can serve to tune the electron density and the hole density practically independently or almost independently of each other. To make contact or contact to the electron layer is just done through here, through the N plus N layer and to the two-dimensional electron layer and out. To provide contact to the holes and also provide holes, because as you see there is no p-type in that structure, we etch the sample vertically down to the Alges barrier, implant it with beryllium, which is a p-type dopant, activate it, and that way make contacts to the holes. Now, when you bias the top layer negatively with respect to the substrate, two quantum wells are formed, as shown here, a top one, which is a quantum well for electrons, and a bottom one, which is a quantum well for holes. And in the device I'm going to disguise, the spacing between these two layers was only something like 140 angstroms, which is considerably smaller than the average distance between particles within each layer. So one expects interlayer correlations, Coulomb correlations, to be very, very strong, as I'm going to prove in a second. Then, as I said before, we have a top gate with which we can modulate the electron density, and the substrate serves, it's a p-n junction, which is reverse bias, so we can modulate the whole density. The whole process, the whole structure is then processed in a whole bar shape, and we end up with something like that. Again, a metal top gate, an electron layer in a whole bar shape, a hole layer in a whole bar shape, and a substrate. A typical drag experiment is done in the following way. We attach an AC source to the electron layer, for instance, drive current in the electron layer, and measure the induced voltage in the hole layer. And of course, we can also measure Hall effect and so on and so forth, and extract the various densities, etc. Now, where are the possible errors that the cook can do. And this is really very important. As you see, this device, you have to bias it with some DC sources because you need coexistence of electrons and holes. And in order to have coexistence of electrons and holes, you have to apply at least a band gap voltage between the two layers. This bias induces DC currents because there is some leakage of electrons through the barrier going this way and leakage of holes going that way. These electrons are collected in the substrate and these holes are collected in the top metal gate. But even without that, even in the electron-electron system, you always have gates and you bias those gates with DC bias. So you always have leakage DC current. Now normally, namely in the absence of magnetic field, this is not really very important because you do your measurement with an AC technique, so you are not sensitive to DC leakage currents. However, in the quantum Hall effect regime, this small AC modulation that you put across one layer modulates the effective bias, for instance, across the barrier, and therefore modulates the DC leakage current. This modulated current could be very, very small. It's in our structure, for instance, for the electrons, it's only something like 1 nanoamp or less than that. But since in the quantum Hall effect regime, all quantities like rho xx and rho xy are extremely sensitive to the filling factors, this modulation of the filling factor generates huge artifacts. So one really has to be extremely, extremely careful sorting out all these artifacts. In our structure, for example, as I'm going to show you, we have no problem to measure the drag in the absence of magnetic field in the two possible configurations. Namely, one can either drive current in the electron layer and measure the drag voltage in the Hall layer, or do the opposite experiment, namely driving current in the Hall layer and measuring the drag in the electron layer, and you know that by the Onsager relation, they should give the same result. However, when you go to the quantum Hall effect regime, just due to the fact that the electron tunneling current is about something like 1 nanoamp, which is really very small. It is even small compared with the AC current that we are putting in the system. Just by virtue of that tunneling current, we cannot, for instance, measure the drag in the configuration where we drive current in the electrons and measure the drag voltage, drive current in the holes and measure the drag voltage in the electrons. Simply, the drag voltage is very small. So very tiny modulations of the DC current in that layer where we measure the drag already give you very large spurious signals that in fact they look like drag because they have all these features of the quantum Hall effect. They quack like drag, but they are ducts, in fact. So in the quantum Hall effect regime, we can do the experiment only in the following way, driving current in the electron layer and measuring drag in the Hall layer, because leakage in the Hall layer is extremely, extremely small. It's on the order of 10 picoamp or something like that. And this is probably due to the fact that their mass is very heavy. All right, so let me now, having shown the kitchen, let me start with the drag measurements at B equals zero, just to give you flavor of how does it look like. So what you see here is the drag measured in two configurations. Those symbols mark two configurations, one when we drive current in the electron layer and measure the voltage in the Hall layer, or vice versa. And you can see that indeed the Onsager relation holds. So first of all, you see that the drag per square increases as density, for instance, in this case of the electrons, grows smaller. It's a fixed density of holes. And you see that the Onsager relation indeed holds. But by that time, we already have pretty good theory to calculate the drag in the absence of magnetic field. It originates actually from a work by Shverkovsky, an Australian group, and we can describe the drag now pretty well. I just want a quantitative point. Compared with the electron-electron system, the drag at B equals zero could be something like 10 to 100 times larger. And this is the result of the very strong Coulomb correlations between electrons and holes. For instance, if you take just the RPA calculation, let's say for this curve, which is these empty squares, the RPA, as you know, take correlations only in a very limited way and do not really distinguish between electron-electron, electron-hole. This calculation goes beyond that, takes what theorists call a vertex correction, and I never understood, but it takes correlations into account, and at low densities, in fact, the drag could be roughly an order of magnitude larger than what you would get from an RPA. In the electron-electron system, just the opposite thing is happening. Correlations are negative, and they reduce the drag. No, the way we do it, it takes both. It takes all correlations into account, yes. Yes, we treat the matrix, the whole matrix, on equal footing. All right. So, and you can see also the data. I also have here the data, for instance, as a function of temperature. So this is at a fixed hole density versus temperature for various electron densities. And you can see again that drag per square is very, very large. And we understand it pretty well. Now we turn to the magnetic field results. As I was mentioning before, due to very tiny leakages in the electron layer, we can measure the drag only in one orientation, namely when we apply the current in the electron layer and measure the drag in the whole layer. So the rest of the measurements will be in that configuration. Now, in order to avoid the complications, rather than scanning the magnetic field, which changes the filling factor in both layers, what we do in the experiment, we fix the magnetic field, we fix the hole concentrations, and just vary the electron concentration. So the electrons are kept almost at a fixed filling factor, and we just change the filling factor of the electrons. From reasons that I'm going to discuss later, we usually fix the hole concentration or the whole filling factor to a point where rho xx of the holes is maximal. And usually we work either at 3/2 or at 5/2. With the holes, it doesn't really change the results very much. All right, so I start with a relatively weak magnetic field, 2.3 Tesla. Temperature is 1/3, it's actually 0.33 Kelvin. And what you see here is, first of all, the electronic rho xx, that's the blue curve, electronic rho xx. You see the electronic rho xy. Holes are kept at a constant density. This is the density. And we just tune the electron density. This is the electron gate, and it is roughly proportional to the electron density. So as we go this way, we reduce the electron density, and the corresponding filling factors for the electrons are shown here. The filling factor for the holes in this experiment is 3/2. Now, as you can see, the drag, which is the red curve, follows rho xx of the electrons. This is pretty much as expected. Now, the zero of the drag, the experimental zero, is here, but don't take these negative values too seriously. They are a result of very, very tiny leakage of holes to the top gate, and we are sure of the fact that this is the result of leakage, because you can sort out leakages by just changing the grounding point. So by changing the grounding point, you can reverse the polarity of the leakage and change this offset. However, the picture doesn't really change much, just this offset changes. So you should take this RD seriously. And as you can see, it basically follows rho xx of the electrons. And this is what one would expect. Notice, please, that compared with rho xx, these peaks are slanted to the right a little bit, and I'll come to that point later. But the minimum or the minima are always at the same points where the minimas in rho xx for the electrons are. Okay, now I crank the magnetic field on, and I'll show you the first curve is at relatively high temperature, which is 6 Kelvin. So the field now is 4 Tesla. The whole concentration is this one. And I scan the electron density again. This is rho xx for the electrons. You can barely see the beginning of spin splitting here. But again, drag, first of all, is positive. Namely, it's positive for me, meaning same polarity as what you get in the absence of magnetic field, electrons dragging cords with them. And the curve just follows the blue one. But sorry, in the previous one it was 5 halves, I believe, and this one is 3 halves. 3 halves in this instance. Now a very interesting thing is happening. And what you see here, it's kind of a busy graph. I'll go through it slowly. All right. So again, this curve is rho xx of the electrons for various temperatures varying from 6 Kelvin to one third of Kelvin. And this is the drag resistance. All right? This 6K curve is the same as the one that I've shown you before, just follows rho xx, and that's it. However, when we cool the sample down, something very strange is happening. If you look on the peak between N equal 1 and N equal 2, namely where that peak changes sign as a function of temperature. You start with positive drag, and then as you cool down the sample, drag changes sign, and in fact gets to a very large negative drag. This value is very large drag. Then, the peak between N equal 2 and N equal 3, namely where you just start populating the next level, hardly changes. It becomes a bit narrower, but also rho xx becomes a little bit narrower, so you would expect it to behave that way. But the polarity stays just the same. But then again, the peak between N equal 3 and N equal 4 reverses sign. And the one between 4 and 5 doesn't. So there is clear periodicity. I'm going to show you more clear periodicity. Namely, whenever if I draw very schematically a given Landau level in such a way that this is one spin orientation, this is the other spin orientation, at high temperatures you get positive drag whether your Fermi energy is here or not, or here. But as you cool it down, always the drag in the lower level is positive, but in the upper level is negative. And this comes out to be very consistent in all the data. Now, Tom have shown yesterday very beautiful data on the electron-electron system, but that data is in a totally different regime. Here, it is important to emphasize the differences. We are working, or we see this effect only when we can resolve spin. In Tom's data, spin was not resolved yet, and the minute spin was resolved, his effect really disappeared. You see, I've shown you in the previous graph, in fact, that where we can't resolve spin, like here, when we do not resolve spin, drag is actually just positive. All right, so having done that, having seen that, we're, of course, very puzzled by this behavior. Let me just say,
why? Why didn't Tom resolve the spin?
No, he can resolve the spin, but he claims that as soon as he resolves the spin, his negative drag disappears.
That's a little strong, but we went to really high field where the spin was.
Oh, right, yes. You're right.
And that the periodicity is most clear when spin is unresolved.
Yes, and for us, when we can't resolve spin, we don't see this sign reversal. We see it only when we resolve spin, and I'll show you, we see it also when we fully resolve spin in a second. Alright, the effect is completely symmetric in the magnetic field, and you see the drag here at two different magnetic field orientations, positive and negative, and you see that the drag is pretty much the same. Now, nice thing about that device that I was describing is the fact that you can also use it to measure the compressibility. And the way you measure the compressibility is in the following way. Thank you. The way you measure compressibility is in the following way. You vary the gate voltage and you measure the variation in the hole density. Now, that measures the degree to which the electron layer screens the external field. And from that, you can really extract the inverse compressibility of the electron layer. Jim was the first to do that experiment. Then we also did some experiments on that. And you can see it here. So what you see now is the hole concentration and rho xx for the electrons as a function of that field applied from the gate, from the top gate. So you can clearly see that when you're in a plateau and the electrons do not screen the field, going this way, you are expected to reduce the electron density. And since holes have opposite polarity, because this is not compressible, just the hole, and does not screen the field, the hole density grows larger. And then you enter the Landau level, electrons screen the external field. In fact, they overscreen the external field. And you see that the electron density goes down, meaning that the electrons overscreen the external field. But the reason I put this figure was to emphasize that in the compressibility data, we do not see anything spectacular or any spectacular differences between this peak and that peak where they had opposite drag. So at least in this thermodynamic measurement, this asymmetry or antisymmetry between two spin orientations was not really observed. This is density, but yeah, that's the integrated part, but from that, I can also show you the derivative of that, but unless you smooth it out, you have all kind of noise, and then when you take numerical derivative, what you measure is this quantity, and then you take derivative of that, and you obtain the inverse compressibility. But even from here, you can see what's going on. All right, I have very little time, so let me very briefly show you, first of all, data for stronger field, 5.6 Tesla, where the holes now are at 5.5 filling factor. And again, you see the same thing. Between 1 and 2, the drag reverses sign. I'll come to that peak in a second. Between 2 and 3, stays the same. 3 and 4, reverses sign. And the reason I've put this figure is because here, spins are already, at least with regard to transport, they are fully resolved. You see that these two peaks are spaced. There is another peak appearing here at low temperatures, which we do not understand, and I would not discuss here. Now, I would like very briefly now to go back, first of all, to artifacts. And I want to say that we doubt very much that this sign reversal is an artifact, because whatever those artifacts are, they always either proportional to rho xx, rho xy, or to their derivative with respect to density. But if you look, for instance, on this peak and that peak and the corresponding rho xy, it looks pretty much the same. And also all derivatives look pretty much the same. So there is no, at least no artifact that we can think of that would give you sign reversal for these two, because you see, as far as transport is concerned, these two peaks look pretty much the same. Last piece of data which I would like to very briefly show and might be actually very relevant is the following piece of data. This is just what we can do in our structure. We can measure, for instance, rho xx with and without holes. We can remove the holes completely and tune all voltages in such a way that the well stays just the same. So this is rho xx for the electron as a function of magnetic field with and without holes at two different temperatures. So let's concentrate on the low temperature, and please concentrate on the red curve and this mustard color curve. The red curve is rho xx of the electrons where one has holes, and you just have this kind of spin doublet. But you see that as soon as you remove the holes, there is a huge change in rho xx at this filling factor, and no appreciably change in rho xx in the other filling factor. And this is again a periodic phenomenon. I can show you some more data where you can see the periodicity better. This is serious for different curves, but for instance, compare the blue curve, the thick blue curve, to the red one. You see that this peak here, the red one is with holes, the blue one is without holes. And you can see that this peak between knee equal 2 and 3 is very much affected by the absence of holes, but this peak is hardly affected. Again, this peak is very much affected. That one is not really affected. So it seems that the presence and absence of holes affect the electrons very differently depending on their filling factor, whether it is, if you like, at the bottom of this, say between 2 and 3, or between 3 and 4, or 4 and 5, 5, 6, etc. It should be 3 halves. At this one, it should be 3 halves. But I want to really thank you for the question. Holes in our structure have very low mobility in this specific device. In fact, this is a device that we were hoping to study the metal insulator with. And so even you can see that even in the larger field, you don't really have a perfect quantization of the holes. So I think that as far as variations in the density of states of the holes, they are kind of small compared with the electrons. Do I have one more minute? One more minute, all right. Another evidence for this asymmetry between one spin orientation and the other spin orientation is shown here. It appears at magnetic fields below the point where we start having that spin reversal. And this asymmetry also depends on temperature. So this is data. This is just after symmetrization, and this is the anti-symmetric part, doesn't matter. Please look at this one. At high temperatures, for instance, this pink curve, you see that it basically follows rho xx. In fact, you can see that it is a little bit slanted to the left. When you cool it down, again, something very strange is happening. Drag in this spin polarization becomes very, very small, and there is very large enhancement of the drag for this spin polarization. So as you cool it down, the weight really shifts from this peak to that peak. And you can see it, in fact, also in the data that I've shown you right at the beginning. This even weaker magnetic field. At high temperatures, this rho xx, at high temperatures, drag is larger on this side of the peak. Now you don't resolve spin, but it is slanted towards the lower part of the peak, and as you cool it down, it gradually shifts to the right side of the peak. Same thing is happening here, from left side to right side, and so on and so forth. All right, I'll stop at this point. Of course, I mean, not of course, but we don't really have any understanding of that phenomenon. But I've been showing you a number of measurements, in fact, two kinds of even of measurement, one of which is really free of any artifacts, and this is the measurement of raw excess, just due to the question whether there are holes or not. And both type of experiments show that, or at least hint, that spin has really very, very strong effect on the interaction in that system. And in particular, when you're at the bottom of the bend, you have one type of interaction, and the drag can, in fact, reverse sign as you go to the higher part. Thank you.
When the holes are at 3 halves, then the positive, at 1.5, then the positive drag occurs at 2.5, 4.5, or the positive drag occurs, or the negative drag occurs at 3.5, at the odd one.
No. In fact, the filling factor of the holes does not change the polarity of the drag.
But it doesn't matter whether you have 3 halves
or 5 halves, or even in between. It's very hard to measure where you are in the plateau, namely in between peaks. But it seems that the polarity of the drag doesn't. A strict statement I can say is that the drag looks same polarity whether you are at 3 halves or 5 halves. Of the holes.
Yeah, okay, but again, get this, which one was which? The negative peaks occur at 7.5, 11.5.
For the electrons now. Whenever they occur between, at 1.5, it was 1.5 is negative, 2.5 is positive, 3.5 is negative, so on and so forth. Things really dependent on the relative.
Whether the electrons, whether the two layers were the same or different.
Right.
There was
the relative density that matters in one, and not the absolute density. The relative.
But in his case, the two layers are pretty similar. Then, of course. Sure. Well, I was hoping it is not vague. But let me explain. All right, what kind of leakages do one have in that system? First of all, you have, of course, all right, let me start from here. We apply a bias which is roughly band gap. In fact, it's a bit larger than band gap in our system. And therefore, electrons can tunnel through the barrier. Since there is large field here, they do not recombine with holes, but rather fly down to the substrate. And we can measure same current in the electron layer and in the substrate. So electrons fly through here and are collected here. Same thing happens for holes, but apparently due to their very heavy mass, the leakage current for the holes is very tiny. Typical values in our device for this resistance is something between on the order of a few gigohms resistance for the electrons, and about two orders of magnitude higher than that for the holes. All right. Now, this leakage, though it is a DC leakage, is modulated by the AC voltage. And the reason it is modulated by the AC voltage is fun. Well, I can't distinguish between tunneling and whether it is, I don't know, defects or something like that. But yes, it's This is what they refer to.
I mean, I don't know, I'm sort of getting indirect. In my experiments, where we started doing coulombs at a kind of a field, we had samples initially that had Pauling currents that were comparable to the things you mentioned around the nanosphere. And those samples turned out to be useless for coulomb drag because the Pauling was far too large. And there were complicated artifacts that appeared
right.
in the drag signal that had a lot of structure and function of everything.
Sure.
The structure that was determined by the physics of tunneling.
Right.
Not by rho xx.
Right.
Not by rho xy, but by tunneling.
No, so like I was saying, you therefore can't, well, unlike the electron-electron system, where electrons really tunnel from one layer to the other, here electrons are really collected in the substrate and holes are really collected in the top layer.
Let me finish.
And like I was saying before, since the electron leakage is really too large to measure drag in the electron layer, it is indeed too large for that. However, the holes leakage is small enough to measure drag in the hole layer. Now, of course, you know well that you can distinguish leakage by changing grounding and things like that. And we played with that, and we concluded that when you measure drag in the holes, it is a solid piece of data. The other configuration is not, and we see it's not.
Okay.